But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Susan O'Donnell. We're going to be talking about UNESCO, the United Nations Education, Science and Cultural Organization. Is that right, Susan?
Yes, that's right.
And now, of course, do you write the National Monitor?
Yes, I do.
All right, fine. And this is a publication I've taken for a long period of time. It deals with education. But Susan has been, of course, writing some articles on UNESCO. And, of course, the United States had withdrawn from UNESCO back during the Reagan administration because, of course, this was a pro-communist organization dedicated to world government. They wanted to control our education, our science, our culture. They even wanted to control what our newspapers published. And Ronald Reagan justifiably took us out of the UNESCO, but recently our conservative Christian administration has taken us back into UNESCO. What's wrong with that, Susan? Because you have done a tremendous amount of work on UNESCO. Why should anybody be concerned about rejoining this organization?
Well, the administration says that UNESCO has reformed, and I don't know if that's true as far as the, you know, accounting. Apparently, there was a lot of cash outflow that was unaccounted for back in those days, as well as the Secretary General then was Mbow, and was apparently real radical and abusive and very anti-Western. And that was the point where United Nations in general got a real bad reputation in the West. And at least William Norman Griggs wrote that withdrawing from UNESCO was sort of a sacrificial lamb. It was thrown to the public as evidence that we were disturbed by those things, but the intent was always to rejoin UNESCO. And as far as reforming, there hasn't been any change whatsoever in the direction that the education has been taking us.
Well,
in fact, it's gotten more and more involved, more and more global, more and more intrusive in the average person's life.
Well, I think that most people find it difficult to believe that there is an organized effort to create a world government, and that the major force behind that, philosophically and militarily and financially, is the United States of America. We pay over 22 or 23% of the cost of the United Nations, even though certainly we make only a very small. We have one vote there. We have the same vote as Tonga does. And, of course, the purpose behind the United Nations is a world authoritarian government under the control of a ruling elite. No more democracy there. Of course, you can buy votes there. Probably at the United Nations, a lot cheaper. You can buy them in Washington, D.C.
Yes, if you look at the UNESCO has always been run through the Department of State, not the Education Department, although it works with the Department of Education also. But if you look at the Department of State website now, all of the verbiage that it uses when discussing UNESCO are words that have been used by UNESCO since its formation in 1947.
Which
is supporting human rights and democracy and political participation and all that stuff.
Yeah, but of course, it really wants to control education. By controlling education, it controls the minds of our children.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, are being indoctrinated to become good little world citizens in
yes.
the coming world dictatorship. We'll be right back with Susan O'Donnell right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Susan O'Donnell, who has written extensively about UNESCO. And most people already don't understand this organization, but this is dedicated to socialism. And by socialism, I mean ruled by an elite. Forget about this idea of redistributing the wealth. They're not going to redistribute the wealth of the wealthy. It's only the wealth of the middle class as we reduce them to a feudal class. And then, of course, the whole idea of UNESCO. Well, I'm going to let Susan tell us a little bit more because she's been studying this for a long time. Where did UNESCO come from, and how do you see its impact on our society today?
Well, as you know from my newsletter on UNESCO, there were predecessor organizations even before the 1946 formation of UNESCO. There was the International Institute of Intellectual Cooperation and the International Bureau of Education. And the IBE was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, and both, you know, have roots back in the League of Nations era, and, you know, with Colonel House and that whole part of history that I know you're interested in, too. And if I got started talking about it, it would probably take the whole rest of the hour. But once UNESCO got going, right away it took over, it took up teacher training. It was very interested in teacher training and adult education. It didn't want to just deal with children, but also affect adults. And they started publishing. The most well-known thing about UNESCO is a series of booklets that it wrote called Towards World Understanding that made teachers know how to deal with kids and have them change their loyalties from home and family and country to a global perspective, which you can see, you know, magnified all over, you know, the papers today, this global outlook that is promoted. It got started with UNESCO. Julian Huxley is well known as the first Secretary General of UNESCO.
First Secretary General of UNESCO, right.
And his influence began to be felt right away. He was a humanist, a Fabian socialist. He was connected with the IUCN and the World Wildlife Foundation, and you know, to this day, that is being felt because the Earth Charter is promoted by UNESCO, and as well as sustainable development. UNESCO has, you know, developed curricula on those subjects.
I want you to hold that thought right there for just a minute, Susan, as our other stations come on board.
Okay.
Okay, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Susan O'Donnell. We're talking about the UNESCO and this dream. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have a world government and then we could do away with wars and we could redistribute the wealth and we could just have this wonderful utopian society? And what everybody has missed is that this whole movement has been funded by a group of very wealthy men who've created all the wars of the last century, starting with the Spanish-American War and the Boer War and the First World War and the Second World War. I mean, who do you think funded Adolf Hitler? Do you really think that within 5 years of when he came out of the beer hall of Bavaria, where Germany was able to threaten the stability of the entire world, 5 years? Well, you've got to really probably have a tremendous amount of faith in what you've been told by the media to believe that. He was funded by American banks and American corporations, and I even have my syllabus on Iraq, The Untold Story, I have a letter I found from the American ambassador to Germany back in 1936, and he's writing to Colonel House, and he's saying, gee, why are American corporations building up the military capacity of the Germans? We just got through a war. Nobody wants another one. Why are we building up their military capacity when there's no profit to be made? You can't get any money out of Germany. Do the American stockholders know that we're building up Germany and there's no money to be made? Well, of course, we could never let the American people understand that we were creating the foundation for another war. And it's a pattern over and over. But each time these people of great wealth want, you know, they want the wars because hopefully then the people will eventually be willing to accept this world government. And I'm sure when the next world war comes about, the American people will be clamoring for world government as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course, from what they say, you would think that these were the most peace-loving people on Earth. In 1980, there was a World Congress on disarmament education, and then subsequently UNESCO put together a reader on disarmament education and a curriculum. And as soon as UNESCO does that, that through its connections with the NEA and a lot of other organizations, these things start showing up in the classroom. And people never know where they originated from. You know, it would say the Department of Education or your local state, you know, your state Department of Education, but it will never say that the original idea was in UNESCO. So it's really, UNESCO is something that people aren't aware is out there, but it's really been behind so many of the things. Almost, I would be willing to bet if you just say it's been behind everything in education, then you could, you know, be safe to assume that. And then take away whatever isn't. But that would include sex education, sensitivity training, well, as I said, disarmament education, peace education, human rights education, vocational education in the school to work, the Goals 2000, all of those things, behaviorism as techniques, teaching techniques, all those things are UNESCO babies.
And, of course, they're being widely disseminated and accepted here in the United States, as our children learn far more about sex than they do about Shakespeare, far more about, Marilyn Monroe than they do about James Madison.
Yeah, I left out civics education, but I know you've had Alan Quist on the program before, and that's also the parent corporation of the Center for Civics Education is Civitas, of which UNESCO is one of the members.
Well, because the last thing they want is for our children really to understand about our Constitution, about this idea that freedom comes when you limit the power of government, that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and that tyranny and total government are synonymous. And, government has no money but what it takes from us by force and then redistributes to buy the voting support so it can expand its powers over everybody's lives. But this whole thing has nothing to do with helping the common man, although they have to make this as a, we're so concerned about the average individual. We have a war on poverty, and we have more poverty than ever. We have a war on drugs, and we've got more drugs than ever. We've got a war on cancer. Cancer, we used to have maybe 1 in 100 people a century ago got cancer. Now we've had a war on cancer, and we're talking about 1 in every 2 people are going to have a cancer. Gee, I wonder why that is. Mm. We're not fighting the war very effectively.
One thing that's important to know about UNESCO is that it really does support the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
All right, could you explain why that's important?
It's important because they are not. It is not compatible with the limited government of the U.S. Constitution, because it expands on all these so-called rights, entitlements that people have, such as a right to an education, a right to a place to live. It says education is compulsory. You have a right to a job, a right to adequate housing, which is really a prescription for a socialist state, because if everybody has to have all those things, is entitled to all those things, and every person who is working must work and pay for the other things for everybody else to have.
Well, of course, but it also guarantees us the right of freedom of speech and freedom of press and freedom of assembly and freedom of religion, doesn't it?
I don't think so.
Oh, it really does, except they say you have all these rights, except, of course, as long as they're going along with our official policy.
Yeah,
so they have
right.
A proviso in there.
Yeah, there is.
But they never, of course, explain to people that any right you have comes from government. Mm-hmm. And how different it is in America, where our rights come from God. We have God-given rights. People who adhere to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights acknowledge that their rights come from government, and when they come from government, they can be taken away. You can't take away God-given rights, but you can sure take away the rights that government gives you, as Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini, and even our current administration is demonstrating so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now UNESCO really has a sordid history, and when I was reading your background on that, we find that one of the people who was instrumental in this whole organization was a man named Alfred Zimmern, Sir Alfred Zimmern. Why is Sir Alfred Zimmern important, and the fact that he was certainly considered to be the first Secretary General of the UNESCO, and I think he was probably, an Assistant Secretary General, something like that?
He was, I think, a consultant was his formal title with UNESCO.
All right. Why is that important? Why should anybody even be concerned about Sir Alfred Zimmern?
Well, it was because of a tape that I had heard you talking about, Zimmern. I was listening to the tape and washing the dishes one night, and you said you were talking about Zimmern, Alfred Zimmern, in your talk to the Concerned Women of America years ago about Carol Quigley and Tragedy and Hope, about how there was this inner group that had come out of Cecil Rhodes's group, the Milner Kindergarten. I'm probably doing a far less good job than you could.
You go right ahead, though.
But, and you said that Zimmern, that you, when you had looked in the files of Quigley, I guess, back in Georgetown, that you found that Zimmern had communicated back and forth with Quigley, and that from that correspondence you could tell that it was Zimmern that was the man that gave Quigley information about this inner group, and that that was what he could write that book Tragedy and Hope about, and or based on that information he did his 20 years of research. Anyway, I thought Zimmern, that sounds familiar, and then I realized that the books I was looking at about the League of Nations and early UNESCO and the Institute of Intellectual Cooperation, that man was Zimmern.
And it was the same man. Basically,
yes.
The story was this. That Professor Quigley was a historian. He was a liberal historian who taught at Harvard and Princeton long before he ever went to Georgetown University and became the mentor to William Jefferson Clinton. But back in the period immediately following the Second World War, this would be 46, 47, 48, Professor Quigley had gone to England because he wanted to understand the structure of the hierarchy that ruled England. Just as we have a hierarchy that rules America and controls both political parties, so there's a hierarchy that ruled England, and he wanted to understand that. And, of course, he started going through all the records he could find, and he came across Sir Alfred Zimmern, and Professor Zimmern was a professor of international law at Oxford University, and, of course, Professor Quigley was a professor at that time, I suppose, at Harvard, so they became fast friends, and finally Zimmern told Professor Quigley that you could not understand what was going on in England or the United States unless you understood the secret society that he had been a member of. And, of course, he told him about Cecil Rhodes' secret society, that Cecil Rhodes had created a secret society in 1891, and that Professor Zimmern had been a member of that from 1910 to 1922, been part of the inner core of this secret society that had actually created the Boer War, had created the First World War, and of course was in total control of both political parties there in England at that time, or at least was able to influence them. And by 19 had metastasized to America, and here in 1921 had created an organization known as the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, we hear about Condoleezza Rice of the CFR and Dick Cheney of the CFR, and of course Colin Powell from the CFR. The CFR always provides our Secretary of State. It always provides our Director of the CIA, except, of course, George Tenet, but other than that, all of the others had been from the CFR. Going back to 53, always provides the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. You mean there's nobody in America who's smart enough to be chairman of the Federal Reserve Board or Secretary of State or Director of the CIA unless they came from the CFR? Oh, there are lots of smart people out there. They're just never considered. You want to have a consistency in government, and it's always controlled by the same people. And that was the significance of Zimmern. He told Professor Quigley about that. Professor Quigley spent 20 years writing about it, and then he wrote his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And lo and behold, somebody bought up his publisher, Macmillan, destroyed the place in the first half of the book. We have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells that very story. But we'll talk more about that when we get back.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that we carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and of course, we can't make any specific recommendations, medical recommendations for them. We can tell you, however, that people who use Miracle 2 products really swear by them. And, of course, many people use the neutralizer. Seems to help their upper or lower gastrointestinal tract. Many people use the gel on their rash or on acne, things of that sort. And we get all these raving responses and reports from people who use these products, so we hope you'd like to try them. We've used them here in our family for well over 2 years, and we wouldn't be without them. There's a soap, a moisturizing soap, a gel, a lotion, and there is a neutralizing solution. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the Miracle 2 soap products introductory offer. And then we also want to mention we carry something called Phenopoly. And Phenopoly is a program designed to teach you and your children and your grandchildren how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically, because we don't teach this in schools. In fact, they've deliberately dumbed down our children. And if you buy a Phenopoly set from us, we'll give you a couple of books that go into the fact that they intentionally dumbed down our children in our schools using a system that they knew wouldn't work. They threw that out of Russia back in the 1930s when John Dewey tried to introduce it there, because they wanted excellence in education and we wanted mediocrity, and we got it. And that's why, of course, they're doing so well over in India today and China, and why so we have to bring in people from other countries to do our jobs under these special visas, because we don't have a number of engineers and computer programmers we need. Give us a call if you'd like to get Phenopoly at 1-800-544-8927. That's Phenopoly. You'll be glad you got it. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this afternoon is Susan O'Donnell. We've been talking about the background of UNESCO, and of course Professor Alfred Zimmern was instrumental in creating UNESCO. I didn't really know that until I read your commentary there, Susan.
Well, I didn't know that until I heard you talk about Zimmern.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, you have to do so much research. We don't have the people to do the research. The other side has hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, and here we are, just independent people. But Susan does a great job. How could people get your newsletter and some of the information you've put together?
Well, I have a website from It's called the E-Files. It's a kind of a takeoff on the X-Files.
The E-Files, okay.
Yes, it's www.e-files.org. And there's an email address that they can contact me through that if they're interested in subscribing to the National Monitor of Education.
All right, fine. Now, of course, is the truth out there, as they say on the X-Files?
That's what the point was, yes. The weirder, you know, I watch X-Files. I love to watch X-Files because it has, you know, Mulder finding these situations that are so bizarre that nobody believes him. So I thought, oh, that's perfect for education because that happens all the time in education. No one believes you because the media is so predominant, you know, in what they tell you about education. So that was why before I took over the National Monitor of Education, I got started on the E-File. E-Files, but now, actually, National Monitor of Education was written by a former teacher for 25 years, and so that's why I took that over from her.
Well, we're taking it then, and as we've continued taking it just sort of out of a habit, but it's an excellent publication, gives you tremendous knowledge about what's really happening in education, the information you're not going to get from so many of the liberal or even the conservative commentators today. Well, now, as far as UNESCO is concerned, here's an organization that really has, it's an international organization, it's dedicated to world socialism, and of course, it really wants to change the culture and the education of nations throughout the world. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, no question about it. I know you saw my newsletter, and I started with discussing all the different personalities, and they were all radicals, British and American, all dedicated to socialism or and experts in systems in the USSR or other countries. None of them interested in promoting limited government or, the American, old American way. It's been, UNESCO's been totally run by Americans and Europeans and people of other countries that are determined to make us all into the same kind of workers and sharing everything and having a sustainable environment and without much freedom, you know, individual liberty at all.
Well, I think it was so interesting. You were talking about the IUCN, I think it is. Anyway, it's one of these internationalist environmental organizations. And, of course, it all ties into something called sustainable development. Sustainable development is simply a vehicle by which government controls you. It's really a socialist scheme using the background of the environment and maybe perhaps even using some real problems that there are there, which instead of trying to solve them, they try to make them worse and then use the problem that they've created to control you, to take your property, to get you out of your car. That's why they're running the gasoline prices up so high. They want you to quit eating meat. That's what the mad cow scare is all about. And this thing about, oh, McDonald's, hamburgers are just too big. They want to control every aspect of your life. People say, well, that would never happen in America. And yet, of course, we talk to people all the time where they're taking their property rights away, part of an organized program coordinated by this elite who believe that they know far better how we should live than we do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no question. And Charlotte Isherbert would kill me if I didn't say something about behaviorism and conditioning.
All right, fine.
I can't speak to that as well as she can either, but I'm trying to find on my little timeline I have in front of me.
All right, we're going to have to wait because we're going to have to take a break. And when we get back, we'll get into behaviorism.
Okay.
And the fact that so much of this is being planned by the elite who have this plan, and they really believe that if we remold the minds of our children, we can control their actions, we can control their response, we can condition them like we would animals using the Skinner conditioning process, why we can make a wonderful utopian society that they will rule. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
except genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just wanted to mention the Institute of the Constitution, which offers a program that will teach you about America's heritage, why America was different than other countries, and why our freedoms came from God. Now, if you go back into the writings of our founding fathers, you will find out that they believed that governments were instituted among men to preserve our God-given rights. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. But we don't teach that in school anymore. We don't teach anything about the idea that this was established as a Christian nation, and for 150 years everybody knew that. Only in recent years have they so taken over control of our media that they've removed this from the reality of the average American. Well, the Institute of the Constitution is set up to teach you about our heritage. You can actually get 12 lectures by Dr. Eismother, half an hour each, as he takes you point by point by point through an understanding of the Constitution. And then, of course, there are questions afterwards. Now, it all comes in a kit, and you can put this on because you know the questions ahead of time, and you know the answers, and all you have to do is sit down and watch the program through it beforehand, get a group together, have a video there, find me a television set and a video recorder, and you can begin to teach others, and then they can begin to teach others. And these institutes of the Constitution are springing up like mushrooms all across America, and people are beginning to learn what the enemies of freedom fear most. And that is, we'll learn about our Christian heritage, and we'll learn how we're losing it, and we'll learn what we can do to take it back. Call 410-760-9068. 410-760-9068. Or call 410-760-9068 and ask about a Constitution kit. Well, Dr. Stan and our guest today, Susan O'Donnell, we're talking about UNESCO. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment about this organization, which the Bush administration has just recently rejoined, and Laura Bush, of course, has given some speeches to the UNESCO people, how wonderful this organization is. But, of course, we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts, your comments. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And I am deeply concerned that our government is supporting this organization, which for all intents and purposes has always been a communist, revolutionary, hardcore socialist organization. I'm very concerned that the Bush in the latest budget has put in $1.4 billion. We're going to loan the United Nations to renovate the United Nations building in New York and spruce that all up again. Then we're going to give them 30 years to pay it back at 5.5% interest. And then right off the top, since we put up 22% of the money in the United Nations, we're going to pay for 22% of this with the taxpayers' dollars, when, of course, we don't have much money for veterans. We just took $15 billion out of the budget for veterans. We don't have money for so many things that we do need, and we seem to have excessive amounts of money to pour into the war in Iraq and for contracts for Halliburton, which is still paying Dick Cheney $150,000 a year in deferred deferred payments, and he still owes large chunk of stock options in Halliburton, which he should have divested himself of, but Well, of course, we wouldn't expect that Dick Cheney would ever do anything dishonest, would we? So, you know, I'm concerned that, you know, that the United Nations is the major driving force behind this move towards world government today and is using its financial and military power to bring all nations under this common control. With a World Bank, a World Army, a World Court, a World International Court, a World Police Force, a world parliament, and soon probably world taxation. And now they've got us back into UNESCO, which we were out of for so many years. Was there any opposition to going back into UNESCO, Susan?
Well, from Ron Paul and his little group of, you know, like-minded representatives, but there are a few in number. We could use a lot more. And grassroots organizations like Tom DeWeese's American Policy Center. But really, that's it.
And I saw that Henry Hyde, supposedly, everybody thinks he must be a good person because he's always on the right side of the abortion issue, and yet he was one of the people that actually, you know, put in the legislation that we would go back into UNESCO. And my understanding is UNESCO is certainly pro-death, pro-choice, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. I'm sure it's tied into the population control, you know, back at the Julian Huxley's days. He was interested in population control and eugenics.
And, of course, Julian Huxley was the first acting Secretary General of UNESCO. His brother was Aldous Huxley, who wrote The Brave New World and described this horrible society that seems to be developing around us today. And they were both dedicated Fabian socialists, these elitists who believe that they and they alone seem to have the intelligence to rule us common folk.
Uh-huh. Yes, after UNESCO was done figuring out how to brainwash the teachers and therefore the students, during the late 60s and 70s, they developed this concept of lifelong education, or that's the kind of nice term they use for what we see coming or happening now and happened during the 90s, which is sort of an all-encompassing government control of our lives. Which means vocational education for everybody, and that's that school-to-work program that I know you've talked to Michelle Bachmann about. You know, that's a show all in and of itself. And my kids were in public school when that got introduced, and I saw how very sneakily that was done, where they, you know, they sell it to parents as, well, it's just practical because it, you know, teaches kids to be career-minded and get a job so they won't be unemployable when they come out. But really, when you look at the whole school-to-work package, it's a, you know, planned economy with the government and business together deciding, you know, what students are going to be trained for in different areas. And eliminates the freedom of choice for a vocation that people have, that we used to.
And basically what they want to do is have the counselors assign people to jobs. Mm-hmm. You want to be a doctor. Well, we don't need any doctors. We got plenty of doctors. How would you like to be a garbage man? Seriously, I mean, this is the sort of way this whole thing needs, because we need more garbage men. We need more people in this menial task. But, you know, I want to be a lawyer. Well, we don't need any lawyers. We got too many lawyers here. So we're going to assign you to a different task, and then this is what you will be schooled for, and you will start very early in your education for your training in what we think you should be. And this is exactly the sort of thing you have in Russia today, this idea that the state will plan your life. And this is exactly what they've tried to impose here in America. Fortunately, I don't think they've been as successful as they'd like to, but they're certainly working in that direction, aren't they?
Well, they never give up. They'll you know, they continue. And you'll notice that they... there's always push for more legislation now with the California Master Plan. To start children younger in school. You know, now that they've ruined the education and are totally inept at teaching basic, you know, reading and math skills and whatever, they say that the kids have to start earlier. You know, preschool has there's a big push on for universal preschool.
Well, have you seen these television ads, you know, success by six, you know?
Yeah.
We've got to get what they really want to do is get the children out of the home where
yes.
they'll be trained in God and family and patriotism, and they want to get them into school because they want to begin to control the reality early. They want to begin to indoctrinate them in environmentalism and loving the trees so they can hug the trees.
I'm thinking like a global citizen.
Absolutely. That's
willing
really
to share and equalize the wealth among countries and among individuals.
And they train these children, they change their attitudes, they change their values, they change their beliefs, and that's what it's all about. In fact, that's what this whole new program, No Child Left Behind, that the Bush administration put through, actually was Teddy Kennedy's bill, but the Republicans got it through because Teddy Kennedy never could have gotten that legislation through. You get so much more bad legislation when you have a Republican administration because there's no opposition to these fascist programs. And, of course, the whole idea that the federal government will begin testing the children, and the children have to be educated to the test, or the teacher is doing a poor job. And the purpose of the test is to change your child's attitudes towards God and family and country.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it definitely is. They always come out of, I noticed that with UN and UNESCO and all these international organizations, they have these giant conferences, and they're usually in some part of the world that's impossible for most Americans to get to, like Beijing or Amman, Jordan, or Senegal or someplace. And there they hash out these plans that form goals, and they're the international goals, and then they get transmuted into something that happens in the United States, and most people oblivious that it happened at an international level. It's just the same format we've seen in the environmental movement and the, you know, everything else, population control. And then it filters down to us, you know, and we think, oh, well, it's just a local thing or something that, you know, our president came up with, when really it's came from, you know, international planners.
Oh, and I think this is really so true. And, of course, all of this is decided at the international level, and then, of course, it just comes down to us. Now, the American think tanks are very, very influential in all of this, but the decisions are made internationally, and, of course, they are then introduced into every country in the world. Well, of course, you have some country that doesn't want to go along with it. The next thing you know, they've got a revolution there. Why? Their ruler is a wicked man. He doesn't allow democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have all these good countries like Egypt, where they get 99.9% of the people to vote for Mubarak, who we back financially with billions of dollars every year. That's democracy. Or, you know, this sort of thing happens over and over again. This, I think, happened with Aristide, who we put into power, and he got well over 96-98% of the vote, too. He just didn't allow any opposition. That was the sort of government we put in power. Of course, we recently took it out of power. But this is how the system really works. And if you've got a ruler who won't go along with our system, why, the next thing you know, there's a revolution in that country.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when they talk about spreading democracy in other countries and, you know, the American way of life, and you compare it to or think about how little influence that, you know, the people have here and declining in our education system, then you know that what you think of as spreading freedom and democracy in the American way isn't what they are talking about.
And, of course, our fathers would turn over in their graves if they knew that people were even mentioning that we were a democracy at a national level. For
yes.
James Madison had said so well, democracies are rare spectacles of turbulence and contention, are incompatible with the rights of personal liberty and private property, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. But they never teach that in school today. That comes from the 10th of the Federalist Papers, incidentally, if you'd like to check it out. The 10th of the Federalist Papers, James Madison. But then we don't teach that in school anymore, because the president says we're a democracy, and John Kerry says we're a democracy, and all the people in the legislature say that we're a democracy. And there's only a few people out here who are saying, hey, America was different because we were a republic, and the power of the central authority was to be limited by the change of the Constitution. and of course were attacked and demonized, and put into that category of people who believe in black helicopters, anybody who challenges the fact that we are a democracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I started out as a liberal, and that's why my kids were in here in public school in Berkeley, and it was, you know, I changed gradually just because I was there a lot. I was PTA president. I was determined to, you know, make our kids' school work. And in the early 90s, I was just got beaten down after a while with the multiculturalism and environmentalism that was constantly, you know, coming through their assignments and field trips and assemblies, and, you know, everything was on those themes, environmentalism and multiculturalism. And now I see that those are main, you know, things from UNESCO.
Of course, even Earth Day, of course, we celebrate Earth Day in all of our schools. That's Lenin's birthday. Every communist knows that. Every socialist knows that.
Uh-huh.
They laugh at how stupid we are. And, of course, the environmental movement is simply a justification for ever more government control over our lives. And that's why they speak of communists as, well, communist environmentalists. They're green on the outside, but they're red on the inside, because the solution to every environmental problem is a new government law to take away our freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I would, I really encourage parents. I wish I had taken my kids out much earlier. In fact, I never would have gone if I had known. And really, I think one of the key things that we have to do is start with small children and teach them, you know, about freedom and being a republic and God-given rights and real history. You know, I know there's parents that are conscientious that don't want to be misleading their kids, because there's so much more incorrect historical information than there is correct information. But we really need to start working on creating, you know, a core group of, you know, young people that will grow into adults and start and be more aware. You know, I know it's really expensive to look at private tuition or sacrificing a salary to stay home and teach your kids, but really, for their future, it is very important. It's it will be impossible, I think, to gain freedom back unless we start, you know, taking back our parental responsibilities and teaching our kids how to be Americans again.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Well, we carry an excellent homeschooling program for $199.95. Takes your children from grammar school to high school. Only have to buy one set of books. That's the Saxon Math textbooks. That's the Robinson homeschool curriculum that we recommend it through Radio Liberty. But, you know, there's so much information out there. Parents, if they possibly can, if they any way they can afford it, get your kids out of government schools. Because, of course, the purpose is not to educate, but to indoctrinate and change their attitude, as we said earlier, towards God and family and country. People think that children come out of school liberals because, of course, they have such a good heart. No, it's because they've been indoctrinated, but they don't want you to know that. And I know, because I came out of liberal just like you did, Susan. It took me a long, long time before I got smart enough to realize that my college education was a fraud. I was not educated. I was taught that the Piltdown man, was he was real, and for 50 years, scientists all across the world accepted that he was the missing link, and that's a pretty poor commentary on science.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know revisionism has really gone on for a long time. You know, people think that incorrectly that education just changed in the 60s when everybody got hippies and started using drugs and stuff, but really it's been a continuous process for a long time, you know, since back to the days of, you know, Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller. So it's no wonder if our parents and possibly grandparents were already on the road to collectivism, you know, being taught as collectivists.
And I think that is the hardest thing for the average individual to accept. And that is the fact that these people of great wealth, the John D. Rockefellers, the Henry Fords, the Andrew Carnegies, were dedicated to socialism. Oh, no, they were free enterprise. No, they weren't. They wanted free enterprise for themselves, but they did not want free enterprise for you. because, of course, they accumulated great fortunes, and then they used it, of course, to push this concept of socialism and internationalism and the New World Order and the New World Religion. Well, we're just about out of time. What would your parting thoughts be for our listeners today, Susan?
Well, again, to encourage parents to have their kids not in public education and maybe not even in private schools unless they're extremely selective. And just try and educate yourself on what's going on, because, you know, it's been very discouraging for to find out the Republicans are basically, you know, supporting the same UNESCO program that has been in development since, you know, back in 1920 or whatever.
Well, of course, we've got some good Republicans. We've got an awful lot of who are compromising. In the state legislature here in California, I will give them a pretty good rating. At least they've held out against the increasing taxes. And yet, of course, back in Washington, D.C., the Republicans are pushing these high taxes. I mean, the greatest, I shouldn't say high taxes, I'm saying massive spending. No, they want tax cuts and massive spending. You can't have it both ways. So we got a real problem in Washington, D.C., and it's about time we set the people back there who believed in limited government. Susan, our guest has been Susan O'Donnell. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited. And they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated. They were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just suggest several of our four tape sets that I hope many of you will want to get. One of the calls, The Secret Government. It's an interview. It's not an interview I did, but it's an interview with Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, an important part of history. And then, of course, it has my talk on geopolitics, which gives you an overview of what's going on today. We have a four tape set on secret societies that includes the talk that Susan O'Donnell was talking about, a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and then, of course, my talk on Brotherhood of Darkness, and then a critique of Phyllis Schlafly's book, A Choice Not an Echo, pointing out that they always select both the Democrat and Republican candidates, and, of course, then they give us the choice of the candidate, of which one of their candidates we want to vote for. Until you understand how the game is really played, you won't be able to be effective in this battle and understanding that behind everything that's going on are spiritual forces. So the Secret Government four tapes, the Secret Society's four tapes, we have a Secret Government special with two video sets to go along with that called Exposing the Illuminati from Within by Bill Snevelin. We have a four-tape set on the assassination of John Kennedy. We have a JFK assassination update with an interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown, who is Lyndon Johnson's mistress, and she'll tell you about the meeting that was held the night before the assassination, who was there, and what pretty well what was planned. A fascinating insight into history, available only through Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for the Secret Government tapes, the Secret Society's tape, the Secret Government special, JFK tapes, or JFK update tapes. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day across America on the Internet, 4 hours every day on shortwave. But we have a chance to reach the nation. And if you believe there's a problem or would like to be part of our team, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And for a suggested gift, why, of at least $20 a month, you'll get our four best tapes, our monthly newsletter, but you'll be helping us reach America. And then, of course, we hope that if you'd like to get a copy of one of our newsletters, I think our February newsletter goes into what really happened on the morning of September 11th. Why, we'll be glad to send you a copy of the February newsletter. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Now, you can get so much of our information off of our website at RadioLiberty.com, and you can get all of our newsletters going back many years. You can listen to our archive programs as well as our live programs, and we hope that you'll tell other people, because that's how we really are building up our listening audience across America. People telling people telling people. And sometimes when people get started listening, why, they're sure we're crazy. And then after a while, they're sort of afraid maybe we're not. And then they see the events unfolding, and they begin to understand how everything is being manipulated, how the establishment will bring various people in to try to run them from office to see if they can sell them to the American people, as they did with Wesley Clark. And, well, he was such a poor candidate, they couldn't even sell him with all of the money and of course, time that they invested in Wesley Clark's, General Clark's candidacy. But that's all right. They're certainly happy with John Kerry. After all, he's a member of Skull and Bones. He's a member of Council on Foreign Relations. And I really think they really want to have George Bush reelected, but it won't make a lot of difference which one gets in, because the candidate of their choice always wins. So you need to, of course, get our four tapes set on Skull and Bones. You need to get our four tapes set on the Bohemian Grove. You need to get our four tape sets on the secret government and on secret societies, and so much information is available. And, of course, you can go to our website and see all the four tape sets and videos we have. Let me suggest the video Diaprax in the Church, the story of the church growth movement, our four tape set on the church growth movement. Megiddo, the March to Armageddon, tells about the fact we're moving into World War III. My video, Brotherhood of Darkness. My video, 9/11, contrived. My video, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy. It's an interview I did with Professor Sutton shortly before he died, or sometime before he died. But it, of course, goes into the fact that, well, how is it that Vietnam, a little nation the size of the state of Mississippi, could hold out against the United States for 10 long years, and then America lost the war? Well, very simply, we financed the North Vietnamese. We created the best enemy money could buy, because Vietnam had nothing to do with winning and defeating communism, because we financed communism since its inception, and we're still financing it in China today. We're still financing it in Russia today. But we can't let the American people know that, of course. So, anyway, first we suggest that the video, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy, we have a book by Professor Sutton by that same name, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy. Certainly my video, Iraq, The Untold Story, will explain how all the wars of the last century were contrived and gives you the documentation for the fact that the war with Iraq was planned long before the 9/11 attack. That was simply the excuse. You had to give an excuse to the American people if they were going to send their boys overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die. Oh, it was we're fighting terrorism. No, they planned on this, and you'll actually read the documents going into the background of the plans there. If you get our syllabus, that is, of course, the Iraq, the Untold Story syllabus. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.